Time magazine had an article in which Britney Spears promoted wholesome values. She continued, as she says, to promote wholesome values, particularly through her example of continued physical purity, as she said back in February. Found it interesting, though, in spite of this, as do many folks find interesting, that while she promotes wholesome values through the physical purity, she continues to wear the outfits that encourage our little girls to dress promiscuously. It's interesting that stores, the back-to-school craze that had started last month of people going and, of course, buying the new school clothes, the stores couldn't keep enough of the Britney outfits, the hip huggers, the tube tops, and all that stuff on the shelf. It just kept selling out. In fact, there's one national chain called the Rave Girl that sells stretch flares and leather pants to little girls age 7 and up. One little girl, 11 years old, Sarah Roberts, said that boys only notice girls if skin is showing. 11 years old. And she said, "We compare ourselves to Britney, and most of the time it makes us feel bad because we don't match up." Spears was asked recently how she felt about this, about parents' concerns that the kids looked up to her as a role model, and how she felt about that. And she made an interesting comment. She said, quote, "It's up to the parents to explain that to their children. I really don't like to be considered a role model. I want to be me. And hopefully people will like that." I feel like she's right, and I feel like she's wrong. I feel like she's wrong in the sense that we do have an obligation to one another. We can't just be me and let people deal with that. We have a responsibility to each other. But she's also right in the sense that it is up to parents to teach values to their children and to allow what is bought to be worn. Some of you may have seen before the commercial was pulled, the JCPenney recently had a television ad that showed a mother encouraging her young daughter to wear her hip huggers just a little lower. And so many parents were outraged over that they JCPenney pulled the commercial off television. But it's interesting to me because, unfortunately, there are those who care about what their kids wear, and as the commercial showed, there are those who either don't care or encourage the wrong direction in what our kids are wearing today. And as a result, this fall, New York State's requiring all public school districts to adopt dress codes. We usually think of New York, you know, as, hey, whatever, but isn't that amazing? Dress codes, all public schools. And in North Carolina, the bill that allowed the Ten Commandments to be posted also had with it a dress code. One of the principals, Keith Nigel, said, "The boys sometimes look sloppy. The girls don't have much in the way of clothing on." Another principal, Lauren Allen, says, "I saw it shopping myself. The truth of the matter is, unless kids are buying at Talbot's, which they're not going to do, it's impossible to find anything." You know, I think this is a problem not just for youth, but for us as adults, because our own sensibilities have been gotten dull, because of our culture's lack of modesty. Kathy, my wife, recently she bought us an outfit. I'm not sure what you call it, a suit or something, but it's got a vest and it had a shirt with it. And she bought it for the vest, but she came home and she showed me this shirt. And she showed it to me, she held it up, and she says, "This would fit our 8-year-old. It's one of those stretch shirts. And she says, "It angers me that I've got to go to the mall or I've got to go to wherever, and basically all I've got to buy from are immodest clothes. That our culture basically forces women to dress immodestly." How can we be modest in a culture that is anything but that? Turn with me, if you would, in the Bible to 1 Timothy chapter 2. If you read through the Scriptures, you see a theme that comes up over and over and over again. And that is that the good lives that we live on the outside, we also should have a good heart that backs that up. In fact, Jesus, one time when he was talking to the Pharisees, he said, you guys look so great, you look so holy on the outside, but on the inside, you're like dead men's bones. You don't really have it together in your heart, though you do everything right on the outside. He called that hypocrisy. What we're going to talk about today is just as equally a biblical truth, and yet it's totally the other side of it. And it's not just that, you know, you want to look good on the outside, but you also have to have a good heart. Now the message today is to those of us who have good hearts, make sure you look good on the outside. Make sure not only that your walk matches your talk, but that your talk matches your walk. That it goes both ways. That it's not inside I'm one way, but outside I'm the other. But there should be a parallel. 1 Timothy chapter 2, we're going to start about halfway down in verse 9. Look at that, where Paul says, likewise, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not just with braided hair, or not with braided hair, and gold, or pearls, or costly garments. Now, I want to say up front, as Britt mentioned, this is not just an issue for women. Men need to deal with the issue of modesty as well. And we'll talk about that as we go through it. Though it is interesting, as you read through the scriptures and as you live through life, you find an interesting, you might say, topic that is drawn toward each sex. You read through the Bible and you see that the man primarily is commanded in to be self-controlled in the area of purity, to be self-controlled in the area of lust and having to do with the eyes. But you look at the woman, and the woman is primarily talked about, at least in this context, focusing on the issue of modesty. I can't think of a verse in the Bible, unless it's talking about the priests being careful when they walk up the stairs, where a man is given the command to be modest. And there are times in the scriptures where you think about how many times is a woman told to be self-controlled in the area of lust and purity. We each have our weaknesses. And so as the text focuses on the issue of modesty toward women, and it'll be made clear as we go through that we're not just talking, though, about women. Because it wasn't Bathsheba's fault that David lusted. Think about back to that old story. And yet there was a contribution there to her bathing in full view. So it's kind of a two-edged sword that we want to look at here today. Paul says here in verse 9, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing. Interestingly, in our English translation, you don't see the relationship at all, but in the original language, the word that Paul used for adorn and proper clothing, so adorn and proper, both come from the original same word. Originally, they stem from the word cosmos. Interestingly, we get our word cosmetic from it. It's a word that sometimes is translated world, but it has the idea of the orderliness of the world, hence the translation proper here. The idea is, and you may have a King James translation sitting in front of you, and if you do, you have in this verse really, I think, a mistake. And that is because it says that women are to walk around basically shamefacedness, I think is the way it's written there. And that's really a bad translation. It's not just an unkosher or unpopular translation, it's wrong. That's not what the original text is saying. Paul is not saying that women need to walk around ashamed or with their head down or in some kind of sense of shame, but rather their clothing is to be modest, and that is coupled with discreetly or discretion. Interesting about that word, Paul uses that same word when he wrote to another pastor named Titus, and he says, you need to tell the young men to be, and the New International Version translates it, self-controlled. It's that word, the word for discretion. It essentially means that you're sensible and you use good judgment. And for the young men, it was in the context of moral purity. And for the ladies, here it's in the context of what you wear. That you need to use good judgment and you need to be sensible. And then he gives some examples here. Look at this. He says, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly garments. And all of the husbands in the congregation today can say, that's great about the costly garments. I'm all for that myself. But Paul is not giving us a dress code here. Because I dare say we could all stand up and say, all right, who's got braided hair? Who's got gold? Who's got pearls on? Who's got costly garments? Paul is not telling us that, look, ladies, you need to look terrible and you need to go and buy the cheapest thing on the rack. He's not giving us a dress code, but rather he's giving us a filter through which to test your motivations. How do we know that? Because look at the next verse, verse 10. Notice it starts with a contrast. Not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly garments, to verse 10, but rather by means of good works, as befits women making a claim to godliness. You see what he's contrasting? He has the word but there. He's contrasting this fancy way to dress, or not this way, but rather this way. How should you dress yourself? Certainly modestly and discreetly with clothing. And then he gets specific and he says, essentially what he's saying is, do you distinguish yourself or do you try to make yourself look good through this way or through this way? What distinguishes you as a beautiful woman? Is it what you wear? Is it your gold? Is it your pearls? Is it your costly garments? Is it your designer jeans? Or is it your designer heart? Because he says it should not be the outside alone. It should be the good deeds. And notice, too, he says that the two work in conjunction, that godliness is only a claim if this isn't done. Because he says this should be done as befits women making a claim to godliness. So godliness is just a claim, and that's all it is, if there's not modesty and good works that go along with your claim to godliness. Peter said a very similar thing in a book that he wrote. Look at the screen for just a second at 1 Peter 3, where Peter writes these words to the ladies. He says, let not your adornment be merely external, braiding the hair and wearing gold jewelry or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. You see the contrast he's making? It's the same thing Paul was saying. That your beauty is not just external, but it needs to be internal. Now, he's not saying don't make yourself ugly on the outside, but he's saying along with that, along with looking good on the outside, make sure you're beautiful in your heart, not just on the outside. There was a lady recently named Beverly King wanted so badly to have tickets to a Madonna concert that she entered a stunt for a radio program that the winning top two winners would get tickets to a Madonna concert. And she won. She was one of the top two winners. You know what she had to do? She had to ride naked on a horse. I know, that's right. And to ride naked on a horse through a park where people could see her. And she did it. And she won. Well, somebody saw her, obviously. That was part of the deal. Called the police. Police came, arrested her. And now she faces, if she's convicted, a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. And she said, she looked back and she says, in retrospect, I was in the wrong. You know what the other lady had to do? The other winner... She had to shave her head and eat a bowl of worms and dog food. Now, I share that with you not to spoil your upcoming lunch, but I share that with you to show you the level at which immodesty takes a person. It takes you to the level of where, as Paul said, the glory of a woman is her hair. And for that lady to have to shave her head would have been incredibly humiliating. Eat dog food and worms, probably a close second. But the other, with the immodesty, brings it down to that level. that immodesty equals indignity. It's very easy to identify the extremes in what is modest and what is immodest. But let's look at what the extreme is of modesty, first of all. Fine example is the oppression. And you might say that this is the dress of the Taliban. The way that they treat ladies over there. They make them dress basically in this kind of a garb that you can see absolutely nothing of the woman. And there's nothing but just slits where she can see out of this costume. And the problem here, I mean, the idea logically behind it, logically, it's not logical at all, but is this helps the problem of male lusts because there's nothing to lust at. But this also takes away an incredible amount of dignity for her. She's not given adequate medical help because a doctor would have to see her for that to happen. And if she breaks any of the rules of conduct, of course, she can be tortured or killed. That's an extreme. That's extreme modesty. On the other end of the spectrum is what you might call exhibitionism. Now, I don't think Eve was an exhibitionist, but we can't show you an exhibitionist, so we'll show you Eve. But this is the other end of the spectrum. Now you go from fully covered to fully uncovered. This is just as much of an indignity to a woman because she is seen nothing more now as an object of sexuality. And ironically, both extremes lack dignity. Modesty, in other words, is in the middle ground. She is neither covered to the point of lacking individuality or individual expression, and she's neither uncovered to the point of where she's nothing more than an object of sexual desire. Modesty preserves dignity. Modesty is in between, to where a modest woman of God clothes her body with care so that the character of her heart is displayed and her love for the Lord Jesus Christ is displayed. And again, this is not just an issue for women. Washington Monthly had an article not too long ago in which a feminist wrote the article, and she says she loves men's magazines because it holds up an impossible standard for men to attain to physically, just as much as the glamour magazines hold up for the women. And she says she likes that because it gives both of us, she is a feminist, say it gives both men and women equal unattainability. And so she likes that. And as men, too, we live in a culture where if you don't have washboard abs, if you don't have biceps like Arnold, then you feel you're less than you should be. And there is an infatuation with the physical. And apparently, this is happening as well for men because just 3 years ago, $3.5 billion were spent for men on tooth whiteners and hair color. In the last 10 years, twice as many men as 10 years ago are now getting facelifts. It's not just an issue for ladies. So what is modesty then? If it's not this extreme, and if it's not this extreme, then where is it in the middle? What is the modesty that the Lord would require of us in order to honor Him? Well, it isn't interesting as you go culture to culture that modesty seems to change is what is culturally acceptable. Back in the 1900s, this was considered fine for the beach. As you can see in the little inset here, not everybody loved the latest fashions. Women were arrested for wearing what some considered indecent clothing, including these bathing suits. So here they are being hauled off the beach for being indecent. Today, if people come to church dressed like that. And we don't consider that a problem. You go to the beach, and it's a lot different, isn't it, today? Especially European beaches. The standards continue to change. So where do you land? Well, you can take one of two extremes as a believer, or you can take somewhere in the middle. Either cover up completely, uncover completely, or the biblical balance in the middle. I think we can find that balance if we ask ourselves a question. And here's the question I think that you need to ask and answer for yourself as you get up every single day, as you prepare for the day and you look in the mirror, you need to ask, does the way I look encourage others to know me for my body or for my heart? For my body or for my heart? And as you're asking yourself this, perhaps even with what you're wearing here today, you need to ask why you wear what you wear. Why is it that you have on what you have on? You know, a lot of times guys with our infatuation with looking like Arnold, whether it's, you know, muscles or whatever, you might wear a shirt that accentuates that. The question is, why? Why do you, would you wear something that accentuates your body if it's not just an issue of pride? Now, again, I'm not saying cover up like the Taliban. I'm saying where is the balance between? Are you dressing in such a way for people to know me or just my body? Ladies, same way. And, of course, in our culture, this is crazy for us guys. It's, like I say, you think it's bad here in America, go to Europe sometime. It's even worse over there. The pornography is blatant. You step out of the subway and boom, there it is. But here in our culture as well, you don't have to go far to bump into. Now, again, not just the extreme, but even walking down the street. Sometimes when I'm walking down the street, there's a couple of two, three ladies that I know work here on the square because they're always here. And one time, I tell you, I wanted to walk up to them and say, "Ma'am, don't do that. That bothers me." But instead I just said good morning. I think one of the greatest tragedies in our immodest culture is that of taking modesty away from women. What it does is it takes from them the very thing that their immodesty is trying to give them. And what I mean by that is simply this, that a lot of times when a woman will wear something immodest, what is she trying to do but get male attention? But what kind of male attention does she get except the kind of male attention she doesn't want to get? Because when she dresses in a fashion like that, she gets somebody that's interested only in her physically. And hands down, women, as they should, want to be loved not just for what they are, but for who they are. Modesty makes our hearts attractive. That's what you want somebody to be attracted to. So ask yourself that question. Does it encourage others to know me for my body or for my heart? As you trace this theme throughout the whole Old Testament, you see the same thing continuing to pop up. For example, in Genesis, when Abraham wanted to get a wife for his son Isaac, very important wife for Isaac, because this is the one through whom the promise is going to come. This is the one through whom Jesus is going to come, the Jewish race. I mean, the whole nine yards. This is an important woman. Sends his servant to go find a wife for his son. The servant comes back with Rebekah, godly woman. I want you to look at the screen for a second at Genesis 24, at the first time Isaac and Rebekah, this husband and wife-to-be, meet each other. Look at the screen at what happens. Isaac went out to meditate in the field toward evening. He lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, camels were coming. Rebekah lifted up her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she dismounted from the camel. Literally, she jumped off. It's a very, very excited word. She dismounted from the camel, and she said to the servant, "Who is that man walking in the field to meet us?" And the servant said, "He is my master," meaning he's the guy you're going to marry. Then she took her veil and covered herself. Isn't that interesting? For the man that she's going to marry, she sees it as important to present herself before him as modest. Now, we still have this custom today, in some sense. When the bride goes to the altar, she's wearing a veil right before she gets married. You may kiss the bride, the veil is removed, and there is the kiss. Right before the ceremony. But Rebekah's not just doing this for Victorian reasons. But instead, what she is trying to convey, I honestly believe, is that that her modesty here conveys the importance of the meeting of their hearts before the union of their bodies. And in our culture, we've got that backwards. We dress so as to provoke the union of our bodies before the union of our hearts. And that's why we've got so many broken hearts today. It's because we've got it all in reverse. When Solomon was courting his wife, they were continually reminded by the others. If you read through the Song of Solomon, you see that there is a group of people called the chorus in the song. Basically, it's their friends. And they tell them, don't arouse or awaken love until it's time. You see that theme happening over and over. Don't arouse or awaken love until it's time. Wait, hold back on those reins. Don't lose control until it's time. Of course, then when it's time, you can let the horse run without the reins. But he says, until it's time, hold back. Do not arouse or awaken love. And then the night of their wedding night, I want you to look at the screen of what Solomon says to his wife, to his brand new wife. Right before they consummate the marriage, he says, how beautiful you are, my darling, how beautiful you are. Your eyes are like doves behind your veil. Your temples are like a slice of pomegranate behind your veil. What is that communicating? That she's wearing a veil. That the bride remained modest right up to the point of consummation. And it's fascinating. This is Song of Solomon chapter 4. If you read the first three chapters and they're dating in courtship, you see what attracted them to one another is not just physical, because they're constantly said, hold back, whoa, on that. What do they focus on? They focus on their character. My beloved is like this, and you'll go down, and here's the list of his character that he is admired for. But I want you to notice something else by way of contrast. As Solomon continued to write, he not only wrote about the ideal, the way that he did it in his first marriage, but he also wrote about something that Daddy David showed him one time when he was still a young man. In Proverbs 7, evidently David takes him out and says, Solomon, I want you to look, and I want to teach you something by what you see. So he takes him out and he shows him a man who lacks sense, who walks down the street of an adulteress, continues to walk down the street. Now, look at Proverbs 7, just at the screen, at verse 10. How Solomon describes this. He says, and behold, a woman comes out to meet him, dressed as a harlot and cunning of heart. Notice again the relationship between how she dresses and her heart. It's not on the inside, she's a really godly, lovely woman, but on the outside, she kind of dresses with her shirt a little too tight. One is the other. Dressed as a harlot, cunning of heart. That's exactly what Paul is saying when he tells Timothy that ladies should dress modestly as befits women making a claim to godliness. It's not that you make the claim to godliness, but you don't dress modestly. It's both. And notice something else about this verse here in Proverbs. She's dressed as a harlot. I mean, notice if you're dressed as a harlot, that is recognizable. That is objective. You can say, that woman is dressed promiscuously. There's no doubt about it. You can say, I see it. Now, I'm not pointing at you, ma'am. I'm just happen to be pointing at the wall over there. Don't leave. But that's, it says it's objective. She's dressed as a harlot. And notice also there is a calculated result. She expects that because the way she's dressed is going to attract a man sexually. And I'll tell you what, ladies, as a Christian lady, just because you're a Christian lady doesn't have any less of an impact on the kind of man that you'll attract if you don't dress modestly. Solomon wrote here Proverbs 7, but as the Proverbs cruise along, he continues to write another one appropriate to this virtue of modesty, or except now we're talking immodesty. In Proverbs 11, look at the screen again, as it says, as a ring of gold in a swine's snout, so is a beautiful woman who lacks discretion. What a horrible picture. And yet it communicates, doesn't it? It's like, did you ever see that Sesame Street thing? One of these kids is doing his own thing. You're trying to say, what doesn't fit there in that picture? You've got a gold ring, and you've got a beautiful woman. There is nothing wrong with beauty. God made the lofty mountains. God made the placid lakes. God made beautiful people. And I think there's nothing wrong with appreciating that beauty. But that is not to be taken in the sense of lust. And the problem here is that there's power in beauty, there's influence in beauty. And if a woman uses that beauty and dresses provocatively, the influence is not for godly thinking. And there is an outrageous comparison made to show here of two objects we would never think of together. You've got a gold ring. Literally, the Hebrew word talks about it's a nose ring, which is very common in that culture, like earrings are in ours. Of course, nose rings are pretty common in our culture now too, aren't they? But you've got something beautiful, something valuable, and it's not in the nose of a woman, it's in the nose of a pig. And a pig in a Jewish culture was about the worst animal that you could come across. You didn't touch it, you certainly didn't eat it, you wouldn't have anything to do with it, and you certainly wouldn't waste an expensive nose ring and stick it in the nose of a pig. And Solomon's simply saying, look, a beautiful woman is like a pig that has a gold ring in its nose. Those two things don't go together. You shouldn't have it that way. A pig is still a pig, even with the gold ring in his nose. A worthless heart, even if it's covered by beautiful, fair skin, is still a worthless heart. I think that the masculine ideal, the ideal man, and the feminine ideal as well, the ideal woman, have been tainted, if not in our culture, almost lost. The idea of chivalry is almost gone. There's still a few who try to do it, try to be gentlemen by and large. But manliness, once for a man, it meant that you were committed to a woman for your entire life. Now you can't get a man to not sexually harass a woman in the workplace, as you see this happening so often. What keeps the men from doing it in the workplace is lawsuit. But then the same man walks down the street, and there's nothing that keeps a man from sexually harassing a woman on the street. What used to do that? Modesty. A respect for female modesty. We used to be gentlemen. And I want to give some advice to those of you who were fathers. Yesterday we had a wonderful breakfast, father-daughter breakfast, and I brought both my daughters, and as many other fathers, some brought granddaughters as well. But I want to give you a little bit of advice from something that I've observed in my life, particularly to you fathers of daughters. Absent fathers produce promiscuous daughters. You can almost write that in stone, because I've seen it. I'm sure there are exceptions. I've just never seen them. That when there is a daughter whose father is absent, either geographically absent, he's not there at all in the home, or if he's there in the home, he's emotionally absent. That he doesn't really engage. That he just comes and sits and stares at the TV or whatever. But a daughter that doesn't have a closer relationship with her daddy, a lot of times you're going to see that young lady promiscuous. Why? Because there is a hunger for male attention that was not satisfied in the way that it should have been satisfied. And I've seen it over and over and over again. So I want to tell you, those of you who have daughters or granddaughters, almost pleading, give appropriate physical touch to those little girls. Emotional contact to those little girls. You've got to have that kind of love. You've got to have that kind of love, or they're going to seek it elsewhere. What Paul told to the said to the ladies, he also says in the realm of purity to the men. Just don't turn there, but look at the screen at the very end of 1 Timothy, or the second to last chapter there. Chapter 5, verse 2. That the young men are told to relate to the older women as mothers and the younger women as sisters in all purity. I really believe that the issue of cleaning out our minds as men is our issue. is, I mean, because we live in an immodest culture, that's no excuse for lust. We've still got to fight it. We've still got to be under control. 1 Timothy was written to the church, by and large, written to Timothy, a pastor, to tell them how to live in the church. And that being so, I think we've got one more application with the idea of modesty, and that's this. Does the way I look help or hinder others in their worship of God? Before you come to church, I love the casual atmosphere that we have here. It is essential. I don't wear a coat and tie. I hope we never have to do that. I love the casual atmosphere. And you don't have to dress a certain way. I'm not laying down the DCC dress code. I'm just saying that we come here for a purpose. And that purpose is not us. That purpose is the Lord. To learn of Him, that we may honor Him and worship Him. And as we come, we need to look at ourselves and ask, does the way I look help or hinder? Am I going to be a distraction to somebody else? Ladies, are you going to be a distraction by what you're wearing to some brother who wants to worship the Lord and he can't because he can't get past what you're wearing? This is a question we need to ask and answer, and for the men as well. Adam and Eve sinned. They were no longer comfortable with their nakedness. And so in a fallen world, the godly person is going to care about modesty. Let's pray. Father, sometimes this text seems impossible because we live in a culture that is so inundated with immodesty. Such a struggle, both to live up to it and to live in an immodest culture. But God, we know it can be done because Your Word gives us here the principle that we are to be modest, that we are to be pure in our thoughts, what we choose to dwell on, whether or not we take that second glance. And so I pray, Lord, for all of us here today that You would help us to consider more than ourselves. And I pray this for myself as well. That You would help us to ask and answer these questions of how are we on the outside? Are we reflecting our heart? Are we just drawing attention to our body? Are we encouraging others to know us for us or just our body? Are we encouraging others to know You? Or are we distracting from that opportunity? Lord, we love You and want to honor You with our lives. And so we go to do that. In Jesus' name. Amen. Lord bless you.